from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's good to be here tonight. And we got one, where does the phrase wingding come from? It's to indicate a party, but like, what am I thinking, etymology? Is that the right word?
I don't, that's the wrong crowd for that, Ben.
You said it's to indicate a party?
Yeah, like look, there's a wingding going on here.
Like a big deal, a big something.
I thought it was a font.
I'd say Dan doesn't know. I'd say Booba has no idea. And I'd say I have the best idea, but it's not good.
No, if you're like, you're you know, inviting all your friends and you're having a dance.
No, I know what a wingding
you
is,
got bales
Dan.
Of,
I'm just saying.
Oh, sorry.
He's asking where it came from.
Yeah, what's the origination?
Oh, okay, sorry.
We're not confused on the definition of wingding.
I was going to say.
All right, here's what we got going on tonight. First of all, Jeff Arundale. And friends are in studio tonight. It's good to see you guys.
Yeah, good to be here.
We look forward to hearing from them. They got a couple tunes we're going to share. One on an upcoming release.
What?
It's a if anybody listened to the show, they would be getting an excellent treat, like a preview. So my grandma will know, Arundale. My grandma will know this new tune.
Yeah.
So we're going to hear a little bit from them. We want to talk about when beggars are choosers.
Good.
So, dealing with folks who you've given charity to that are kind of snippy about it in a Jesus way.
Yeah.
Because I think we can make a good guess on how Mike might deal with it.
Whoa.
But the question is whether that is how Jesus would handle such a thing.
I've been asked this question multiple times, and my answer changes depending on my mood for the day. And I thought, well, that's not biblical. There's got to be a better way to answer that.
Some sort of standard.
Yeah. And so, like, I gotta be able to apply it because when people tell the story, I'm like, yeah, that's wrong. That's wrong. And then the next month, I'm like, two tunics, man. Give him a tunic. What's the problem? And so there's got to be something to point to.
All right. So when beggars are choosers, we'll talk about that. I want to know, this may be like a can of worms question, but I want to know the place of teaching how to live within sharing the gospel. Because I was reading something today, and it had to do with how we're way underselling grace. We spend a lot of time teaching people how to live. And like we need to commit to grace. Okay, but to a certain extent I agree. But then I wonder, like, you know, the Sermon on the Mount is kind of a description on how to live. You know, are we to treat that as the new law, just another way to know that you've fallen short? What type of effort? How much time do you spend? How appropriate is it to be talking on how to live? And I'll read a little bit to you just so you know where it's coming from. And anyway, I just kind of want to chat about that because I think it's potentially a problem, but I'm not sure where I'm at with it.
I smell Galatians.
Okay.
That's what I smell.
I want to talk about wives and porn and civil liberties, and I'll tell you where that's coming from when we get to it. And then we'll do some advice on Dear Life in the Path. And Mike, Hudson has some Pope style. You believe that stuff?
No doubt. We're like 4 years in, first time Pope style for Hudson. Here's the deal. Don't commit to wingdings. I don't care what they say is happening.
So we'll do some Pope style advice. That's where someone has mistaken Dan Hudson for the Pope, and they're waiting outside of his house.
Time. A very tall Anglo-Saxon Pope.
It could be from his jalopy vehicle. But they are trying to but they won't leave his lawn until he gives some piece of advice, kind of like the Pope would when he goes out on a little stand and puts a hand in the air and says something. That's Hudson's deal for today. He's going to give some Pope style advice. That's what we got going on.
I'm excited for the show, Ben.
Okay, very good. All right, I tell you what. I want to talk about beggars and choosers.
Okay.
So, Mike, what's the deal with beggars that are choosers?
So there's I happen to be in close relationship with some people that basically they spend most of their free time, when I say most, I mean most, distributing items to the needy. They accept donations, and then, you know, they don't put it in a storefront. They don't sell it. They just find other people that need it and then deliver it to them. And basically it's kind of cut out the middleman. There's no reason for anybody to be making money on this. It's just we'll take it and we'll give it to you. You know, just be honest with your needs and whatnot. And so they run into the cause of occasion where people will be continually asking, like, every month, like a certain group, a person will say, okay, I need this this month. And the next month, they need the exact same thing. Or you know, the, and then the next month, it's something else. Like they have, let's say, two kids, one 6 months, one 2 years. So if they give them 6 months and 2 years clothes, you probably don't need three-year-olds clothes next month, right? That sounds real fishy. And so questions like that come up. And then you know, the next month, well, they'll deliver something, and then the month after that, they'll go, they'll want something else. So they'll deliver something else and be like, you can take these back. These really aren't our kids. They're not interested in these. These aren't quite good enough. Ugh. And so, and so you know, they ask, well, what do we do with this? You know, like we didn't buy the clothes. You know, we're distributing. It's basically gas money and time is where we're at, and looking for the heart of Christ to serve people. But like those kind of things. Are I don't know. They just make you step back a little bit and go, I'm not really sure. Like, am I stewarding this well? Are you abusing the system? Do I continue to just keep handing over tunics? Like when he talks about having two tunics, he doesn't say you have an unlimited closet of tunics and you just keep giving them tunics over and over again. But then on the other hand, you know, turn the other cheek kind of comes to mind. Like, you know, they slap you once, you just keep rolling back. And so I don't know. Like what do you do with you know, with people that you're trying to show the love of Christ to? And they are really beggars that are choosers. Like they, what you're offering is not quite good enough. Or I see that you have that you're offering that. I'm gonna continually take it. And so I don't know. I my answer, like I said, it tends to deepen on you know what mood I'm in that day. Some days I'm like, well, let's put a sting on them. Let's figure out what they're doing. They got to be selling it. There's got to be something up. You know, I'll deliver it. You stand over there.
They're distributing used kids' clothes.
Yeah, see, I'm on it. You know. And then sometimes I'm like, look, they saw it, they felt the need, and they asked, and just give it to them. What do you care, right? It's you didn't do anything with it. God provided it, and you know God tells you to give it away, so give it away. So I mean, is it a case by case basis, or is there some scripture that we can fall back on? Is there a blank across the board? Look, it's not yours; it's all God's anyway. Just give it away.
I don't know. I have like three variant things floating around in my mind. So things that I thought of.
One of them is about Superman, isn't it?
Two of them are about Superman, actually. the example, for some reason, the example that popped in my mind was, you know, when it's talking to wives who are married to non-believers?
Yeah.
Like, what was the advice, right? It was basically by your actions, show him the love of Jesus. Even though, and that's there's no time into that. It's as long as it takes, as long as you have the ability to do so. And so, I mean, granted, it's not the exact situation, but I wonder if there's some applicability to that. To say, if someone's not gracious, does it mean you don't give grace? If someone is not appreciative, does it mean that you don't serve them? And I, my first reaction is no. I think you do serve them. I do think you do give grace. I think there's the question of being a good steward. If someone is not, like, let's say they're picky. I guess I probably don't care if they're picky. If they're not using, if they're taking things that could have gone to someone else and they're not using them, I think that's different. Like, if you're not you're trying to be the best steward of those types of things as you can, I think that makes sense. But people's reaction to it, I don't know. I'm not sure that is such a big deal to me.
Well, see, and I think that's where I was trying to dice it out, because like I said, is it like sometimes it's just a pride thing, like how dare you, I watched them put all this work in, you know, they're my entire house is covered in clothes everywhere there's clothes, you know, it's like a puzzle. but some of it's just me being protective of my family members, you know,
right.
But then on the other hand, like it's the steward thing that kind of gets me, and the example I thought of is like it'd just be like if you had a church. And then you get a couple of theological heavyweights start going to your church, right? And they start eating up all the small group time, and they eat up all the worship time, and they eat up all the preaching time because they want to ask questions and argue. You know what I'm saying? And then other people are falling to the wayside and not getting, yeah, you know, not getting the gifts or not getting stewarded to and not being paid any attention to because these guys are like an energy succubus. And so, like, that's the kind of way I see it with the charity, right? You get a couple fellas in there that are just, like, taking and taking and taking and taking. And it's like, yeah, you give the tunic, but then all of a sudden there's no tunics left for anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, so it almost seems like it's a case-by-case basis, but, like, I don't allow Jesus to make enough decisions in my life to do that correctly. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I will still creep in there and go, no, you're foul. There's something foul with you. What do you mean not good enough for you? Seriously. You know, you didn't have anything. We gave you stuff. Now you don't like it? That seems wrong.
Actually, so like the very reference, though, I hate the phrase beggars can't be choosers. Because, like, if I asked for, like, I've had that happen to me before where, like, just because I asked for something or could use something doesn't mean I want crap. And it doesn't mean necessarily that they're giving crap, but like, you know, if you don't dig on it, you don't dig on it. Like, is that a big deal?
Yeah, it seems like every time you collect food at church, someone brings kidney beans.
Yeah.
I'm like, who, what homeless guy is going, man, I hope I get, or lima beans, you know? I'm going, really? I mean, maybe, you know, some people like
it. Yeah, how long was this in your cupboard before you brought it here?
I was like, well, nobody else wants it, I guess we'll give it to the homeless guy, you know? So, yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, you know, if you're going to give something, be generous, you know, give something that.
And I think it's okay, like. It's true that some of the people that are like that are receiving assistance, even from food banks and stuff, you know, they're not eating the carpet. And so if you gave them,
a little reasonable thinking around here. I told them to stop it; they wouldn't listen to me.
If you gave them 10 cans of food, and like 9 of them are things that they like, but they just hate kidney beans, is it like an affront to you that they didn't eat the beans? I'm like,
I think it more
maybe that, give it back and say, hey, maybe give it to someone else who digs on beans.
It's more along the lines of, hey, that's not my brand of kidney beans. You know what I'm saying? Like you give soda and you're like, Hy-Vee soda. Come on, you know.
And I think that would be the extent where I would say, you know, like here's the deal: it makes it very difficult to try to evaluate whether people actually are in need. And people can be posturing. Like, people do that too, you know? They'll posture as if they're more discerning and they're in a better spot than they are to keep up some semblance of a persona that's true or not. And is it appropriate? No. But, you know, does that just not reveal to you perhaps the more that they need ministered to?
You know, I actually just came to my head that why Jesus laid it out the way he did when he said, love God with all your heart and love people, right? Because loving God is filling. And loving people is exhausting. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's one fill and then there's one dump out. And it feels like you have to do it equally, otherwise you end up out of balance.
Actually, that's kind of a cool thought. Like, if you think you're think of a person that you really enjoy in your life, standing next to a guy that you really can't stand. And then, you know, you spend time saying, dude, I really love you. You're great. Thanks for being a cool part of my life. I really appreciate who you are. And then he goes, good. You know what you can do for me? Love that guy. Good luck.
Yeah, you're no friend of mine. We're parting ways, I guess.
You know, I was gonna mention. So I'd heard this, and I don't hold me to this. I haven't checked up on like the societal references that were used, but I heard it explained that section of scripture when it talks about the tunic and the turn in the other cheek and the going the extra mile.
Yeah,
that those were way more pointed at acts of defiance, really, against Rome. Because, for example, if someone were to smack you in the face, they would do it with their backhand as an insult. Okay, if you turn them the other cheek, they don't have a choice but hit you with your forehand, or your palm, which would mean they have to treat you as equals. And of course, the Roman government wouldn't do that. That was an insult to them that you would offer them that cheek and assert yourself as an equal to them. Similarly, when it talks about a brother taken to your court, so the Old Testament says that like you can't leave a man naked. You can't do it. And so if he sues you for your tunic and you give him the cloak too and you walk out of the court naked, the shame is on the other man for having taken your things, for having left you naked. And so, like, again, it's a protest.
I really love that if that's true.
And the last one was the Roman soldier, okay? So a Roman soldier could come up to you, okay, anybody, and make you carry their things and walk a mile with them. It was not legal for them to make you go any farther than that. Anything past that, and they could go to court, or they could be held liable because the government said you can take a mile and that's it. And so if you offer to go 2 miles, now the Roman soldier's in a real position because he either has to let you do it, which puts him in a real trouble with Rome, or he has to say no, which puts you in a position of power over him because you said, I'm going to go this extra mile, and he's having to say, no, I'm not going to – I don't want you to go the extra mile. And you can kind of insist on it. And, like, you've taken a position of power, an act of defiance against that guy.
I'm trying to think now if, in light of that new information, how I've applied those scriptures to charity. And it has something to do with throwing the beans back at the man? I'm not following.
You will eat it and like it?
Are you saying it's not applicable? is that what you're getting at?
All those examples are when you are being treated, where you are being mistreated. I think perhaps, like, if that's accurate... I think sometimes we misuse that verse as like an excuse for being trampled on, and it's just not. Like, that was not Jesus advocating for you to get stamped upon. It was a sign to show you can protest against these things nonviolently. You don't have to start a war. You are showing force here without having to like lift a finger. So I'm not sure it applies, which I think is part of the point. Is sometimes we use those scriptures for backing of like just let a guy continue to use me. or like abuse my my privilege or whatever. And like
he's saying, use your brains to get the best of them.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So I don't know.
This is a whole new angle of the gospel that I'm really in love with.
It'll change your life thinking of it that way, won't it?
So what did we decide now? Did we come down to a? There's probably not a straight answer.
Jeff
Arendelle,
what are your thoughts?
I'm still stuck on those kidney beans or and lima beans. Do you like? What
you've
about,
done it, haven't you, Arendelle?
No,
you're the kidney bean man.
But shouldn't you also bring like a pound of hamburger and some spices? They can turn it into chili.
They don't like chili.
People don't like chili.
Yeah, but people don't do
is
that.
Beneath
though.
Them,
that's the thing. People don't.
Okay, it's perishable. I understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then they don't give you a can opener, so you just have a can you can't do anything with.
Yeah, it's the biggest joke on the homeless man ever. Yeah. Cans.
Take this.
No can opener.
Don't you wish you could eat it?
I bet those kidney beans are old.
You'll never know.
That's not funny.
That's terrible.
So here's the thing. I think it's appropriate to think I want to be a good steward of these things that God has given or that people have provided and that I'm to distribute. So being mindful of that. I think it's good to protect the stewardship of those items and how you use them. However, you know, people's behavior probably isn't the reason to be turned off because people will do that, especially people that need Jesus.
Okay, I think I hear what you're saying now. So if the people are repeatedly abusing the system, you put like a rancid meat in there and that you've gotten the best of them. Here, you can have it. Absolutely. Rancid meat. Done.
I think that's exactly what Jesus was getting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've boiled this down somewhere in Titus, I'm sure. Everybody skips Titus.
I don't know. Mike, that's all of your... That's all of your
not really.
So, what's the... What do you think... What's the crux here? What's the fulcrum of the discussion?
I feel like it's a good steward discussion, right? Like, do you let someone rob the coffers to leave nothing left simply because the coffers are open? Right? Like, do you let them take, like, if you say buy one, it's like the give a penny, take a penny. You let a guy rob 85 cents out of there?
And does it matter if the man needed the 85 cents versus whether he was abusing this? He didn't need it. He just took it because he wanted to. Is that your distinction?
Maybe. Yes.
Because, like, I'm thinking, like, let's say I left 20 bucks on the table and, like, some, I don't know, kid that was obviously in need snuck up and poorly stole my 20 bucks and I saw it. I may or may not stop him.
Yeah.
But, like, if the Monopoly man shows up, struts in with his monocle and, like, makes off with my 20, looks at it, sniffs it, and is like, takes it with him, I'd probably say something about it. Is that the wrong distinction?
Have I made
the wrong distinction?
I think that's probably where the uncomfortableness comes in, is because basically you have to judge justice. You know what I'm saying? You have to say whether it's right and whether it's wrong. And nobody likes doing that, especially when they're trying to serve Jesus. People just want to throw it out there. That's what I want to do. I don't want to be hassled with a bunch of, I think you deserve it, I don't think you deserve it, I didn't deserve what I got. And so, you know, but to a certain point, if you start to mistreat it or keep others from having it, then we start to have a problem. And so it really is, it's a discernment thing. And frankly, I don't think there's a blank across the board statement that you can make. I mean, it just seems like you just got to look at it and be honest with people. And, you know, maybe they'll just demise themselves if you're brutally honest and be done with it. I don't know.
Demise themselves?
In a not taking the stuff kind of way, not a heartbeat kind of thing.
Feels like some sort of eyebrow wax.
Yeah,
I'll take the demise.
I use the wrong word sometimes. I went to a wing-ding before I got here. I don't feel right.
You're listening to Live from the Path. I don't think we landed on much.
No,
we did.
No. Good luck with your problems.
Yeah, we're making a
those that are giving things to other people that
good
may not want them.
It's a valid but ultimately unsuccessful attempt to solve the world's problems. You're listening to Life in the Path. That's just how it is in here. We're in studio with Jeff Arendelle and band. And Jeff, tell me about what's going on in your world.
Well, got an opportunity to head back to Nashville in the spring and got the first five tracks of a new CD put down. The music tracks for that. And hoping to go back, well, planning right now to go back towards the end of November to get five more. And then sometime maybe before, you know, 2020, we'll get the vocals on there and then the new product.
I'm very excited.
Actually, it's going very well. Had a lot of the same musicians and sounds really good.
The drummer for Vince Gill?
No, this time it was the drummer for, who does he drum for? It was somebody famous.
Right on. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I love that guy.
I also have those kind of people over at my house. Sure.
They take the clothes.
Yeah. So,
all right,
so,
Willie Nelson, you ain't getting any more pullovers. I'm telling you, you've had too many.
No, it wasn't him. But also a lot of opportunities for us. And by the way, I want to make sure that Jason, Brandon, and Matt get plenty of kudos. We don't really have, you know, you may try to give us a name at one point, the Jeff Arendelle Band.
You keep getting rid of Matt's.
Yeah.
I had, it was like the two Matt's band.
Yeah.
But then you keep getting, replacing Matt's with other people.
Well,
and
no,
it
this
just
is,
doesn't flow.
Yeah.
You have a Matt.
Jeff Arendelle Band. How about that?
Yeah.
We'll make.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead.
Jeff's like, well, yeah, I mean, that works for me. I don't know.
How do you feel about I Am Great?
Anybody against that?
Oh, that hits me right in the heart.
Jeff is handsome. Anybody? These are all just ideas.
Oh, the name can't lie, though, I suppose. But we've had opportunities to get out and about and play quite a bit. We were at the fair again this year and played at Praise Fest up in, is that Grimes? Granger.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
So did that. Also, we've been starting to play some smaller churches in kind of out in the country, which has been nice. Been to several churches that, you know, they have an older congregation, you know, and they're doing hymns and that sort of thing. And so it's kind of nice and fun just to go in and charge them up a little bit. So it's been fun to take some old hymns into those places, but juice them up a little bit. And usually we have a pretty good reception, you know, when we're there.
I agree. Sometimes. Would you agree? Setting fire in a nursing home really does the job, you know. That's kind of what I got out of it.
Get up and go, Ethel.
That's not funny.
You know, but you get to play in some really cool places when you do that. We played at a church out south of Earlham that is like 150 years old. The building's 100 years old, but beautiful stained glass windows and the acoustics in that place. Almost as good as in here.
Yeah.
By the way, this is one of the better rooms in all of the Des Moines area.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys... People are really starting to get a reputation.
They're sometimes fooled by the quality of the furniture and the show in general.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Don't let it fool you. These four walls, they hold some tunes now.
They do. I mean, I think of the Ryman. I think of that church out south of Earlham. And I think
of
this...
Yeah, Live from the Past Studios.
Live from the Past Studios, absolutely.
You know, Jeff Arendelle is handsome.
Yeah.
That's
maybe Jeff is great is the name of the, name of the band.
who was your engineer that did this? Or was it just... Bubblegum and empty pop cans.
It's,
and
you know, here's the deal.
All right, Arendelle, that stuff's not on the camera. You know what I'm saying? The life happens below the camera. Okay, we're back to Jeff Stinks.
All right, so tell me about the song.
Well, this one that we want to do, God You Our Father, is a it's a worship song, basically, from Psalm 145. And also brings in other elements. Obviously, it's the characteristics of God, but also making sure that we share with those who follow behind us as those before us shared with us the characteristics of God, his miracles, whether it was from the Old Testament or miracles in their own lives. And it's lifting up the character of God, I would say, I guess is a good way to do it. So,
sweet.
Yep. Well, it's called God, You Are Father.
All right. You're listening to Live from the Path with Jeff Arendelle.
Turn our eyes God, you are Father. God, you are Father. God, as we celebrate your goodness and kindness, commending your works as you dwell among us, we share all you've done with the one who follows behind us. God, you God, you were righteous, and we cry, you are the one. Turn our eyes to you on the throne, upon high. God, you are Father. God, you are Father. You are Father. You are Father.
I like that song. You know what I like about Arendelle's tunes? Here's the deal. They're like a soundtrack. You know what I'm saying? Like, this happened last time you were in here. I was determined that I could ride across country listening to the tunes. You know what I'm saying? They're just ones that I could just, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want to skip them.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Usually on, like, song number four, I'm like, eh. usually one's hot and heavy. Two's like the breadwinner of the CD. Three's okay. Yeah. Four's like, all right, you're just phoning it in. You know what I'm saying? But I don't feel that way. I feel like all these tunes are like totally listenable, and like they run on both the song structure and the words are like they apply to me. You know, and so I really liked it. I liked that a lot.
Thank you.
All right, you're listening to Life in the Path. You can find more about Jeff Arendelle, Handsome Jeff. Big Jeff and the Funky Bunch. But going to jeffarendale.com, and you can check out information about that. And you can pick up Jeff's CD. Not Here For Me is available, or you can pick it up to some of his local shows.
Yeah. You can also get it on iTunes too. It's available there. It's also for sale over at Green Grounds Coffee House over there in Valley Junction as
Sweet.
Well.
Yeah. Sweet. Did you know what I heard? So there's a big Apple event tomorrow. And they're moving on to the next step, the next generation, called J-Tunes.
Really?
Hudson!
It's obviously a lie.
Yeah, that place for comedy at Ben's place. Nowhere else.
Nobody laughs at me anywhere. All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. Hey, you can catch us every Monday night here at livefromthepath.org at 10 p.m. or Saturdays at 7 o'clock on the good folks at 99.3 KTIA. And we wouldn't be here at all if not for our two gracious sponsors. Yeah, you have Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower Team. Go to eisenhowerteam.com. Hey, man, I was checking on the Z estimate of my house.
Yeah.
And my house price has gone up over the last year or so.
Yeah, that's right.
And, I mean, I need it to go up just a hair more, but then I might put that baby on the market.
Yeah, you should bail. And then you know who you should call? Bob Eisenhower.
Call Bob Eisenhower.
He knows things.
Here's the deal. Last time I went to sell my house, I talked to Bob, and like we kind of walked through, and he's like, you're really not going to make the money you're looking for, man. I'm like, thanks, Bob. I thought I actually do appreciate that, because I'd rather not put it up for sale and then like have it sit there for 9 months and have people make offers and I turn them down. And Bob's like, it's just not going to work that way. I love dealing with Bob, because he's just going to be honest with you. He's going to, your house will sell to the right person at the right price, and Bob will help you find both of those things. Because, who wants to have your house on the market for a year and a half?
Nobody.
There's this person in Altoona that, like, I've passed this house probably, once a week for 2 years. And it's for sale. And they keep switching realtors, and they keep, like, putting new things on the sign. And I'm like, dude, your house has got to be overpriced.
Yeah.
No one wants your place. I'm sure he's got a bunch of puff in it. He's like, no, this is a great house. Everyone loves it. Yeah. 10 grand.
The realtors and everyone else is wrong.
Yeah.
This place is worth millions.
But Bob will help you with all that stuff. So go to EisenhowerTeam.com and get a hold of Bob Eisenhower, and he can help you buy, sell homes. He's the guy to do it. Also, the folks at Westfield Veterinary Clinic here in Johnston, those guys can help you out with all your pet care needs. They can and of course we always make it sound like some dog needs some kind of rabid surgery, there's an extra leg growing out of him or his tail's using foul language or something.
they do maintenance as well.
Yeah, I mean they like
not everything's a gunshot wound.
they're just a place that they really care for your pets. You know what I always loved about that is like when they go in there, they give the dog your last name. And so when you get your bill, I have a dog and it's like Daisy Foost. And I thought, that's funny. I like, and then she comes out, and it's like picking up one of your kids from the doctor's. They go, how were things?
That's true. Before the dog went in there, he was on share diva status with just one name. And then it comes out with the first and the last name. You're like, aren't you uptown?
Yeah.
Get in the car. You just cost me $800.
So when you go to Westfield Veterinary Clinic here in Johnston, it's just a great place to take your pets. Both Mike and I use them. And,
Dan doesn't believe in veterinary care, otherwise he'd go.
Way to go, Dan. All right. Hey, all right. So here was the question on I came across this thing about church stereotypes. So according to Google, and Mike, and this is weird that this came up because we were just trying this last week, is where if you start typing with the Google predictive search, you just start typing stuff, and then you'll kind of see what it suggests. And it's kind of funny. Like, I got lost in St. Louis and then like the first four entries are, I ate two donuts and passed out, or like, just the things that people are searching for. So anyway, they did some of this to find out about what the perceptions were of like certain denominations and of churches in general. And it's really sad.
Oh no.
So like here's one. Why are evangelicals, and here are the first four suggestions. Why are evangelicals so judgmental? Why are evangelicals so annoying? Why are evangelicals Republicans? Why are evangelicals so crazy? But then, now the only thing to think about this particular set of Google search results is like the guy that's searching it. There's got to be a particular guy that's like not opening up to his friends and neighbors and saying, hey, man, how come that guy's kind of annoying? He goes to the Google and wants some guy on a website to answer the question, yeah, why are evangelicals so annoying? So, there is a little bit to learn from the guy that's searching for that and why those would be the top four results. But they are the top four suggested results anyway.
So you're going to answer the question?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't answer the question.
You got ideas there, Dale?
No.
Here's a couple. Why are Presbyterians, and here we go, why are Presbyterians different? Why are Presbyterians wrong? Why are Presbyterians called the frozen chosen? That's pretty cool. Why are Presbyterians unique? That sounds like a marketing campaign from the PCA.
Like they have guys searching that just to move it up in the results.
You know, here's the deal. Like, why are Presbyterians wrong? Here's what happened. Evangelical man got a conversation with a Presbyterian. He's like, I don't know what it is about that guy, but he ain't right.
I'm gonna judge him. I
don't want to actually read my Bible, so I'm gonna get somebody else who's got the Bible verses ready.
This is so interesting. So, like, if you look at why are Anglicans, like the fourth recommendation is why Anglicans are wrong. So, like. The only thing I can think of is you're meeting somebody and they're telling you about their faith and you go home and you're like, I know that guy's not right. And so you Google search things like, why are Lutherans incorrect?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I might have done that before. I wasn't gearing up for an argument or anything, but I heard – I can't remember what denomination I heard this guy. I'm like, do all so-and-sos think this? Like, this man sounds ridiculous. And so I think I searched it to find out the tenets of their faith to figure out where we'd fallen astray, but – I don't know that I was personally, you know, picking a fight out with a guy.
Yeah. All right. Real quick, I don't think it's going to take too long, but I kind of wanted to talk about this one. There's a book out called How Sex Became a Civil Liberty by Lee Ann Wheeler. And it's basically about how, like, the ACLU has formed how we think about sex, how we separate public and private and that kind of thing. There's one interesting – the reason that she wrote the book, though, was the interesting part that I saw. She said while discussing – she was a history professor at the University of Minnesota says, while discussing pornography with her students at the University of Minnesota, the history professor found that nearly every female student admitted that she would not ask her boyfriend or husband to remove pornography from their home for fear of violating his right of free speech.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
How many people?
I don't know. It's a college classroom, so call it 30.
No, it was all of them, all the ladies.
Yeah.
Oh, all of them.
It said nearly all.
Yeah, okay.
So say 90%, 95% of the ladies in this classroom said, you know, I wouldn't ask him to remove his pornography for fear of violating his right to free speech. Wow. Which I think is the crux of what the book is about, which is a conflation between what is public policy, what is private, how one has influenced the other. Because, like, obviously, there's no standard within the government that says you can't ask your husband or boyfriend to remove his porn from your house.
Right.
And so, but like the majority, a wide majority of these ladies believed that. And so I think that's kind of the crux of the book. But I thought, really? Like, does that not surprise you? Because that really surprised me that there would be people that would think that.
Because they will leave their husband because there's porn on their computer.
But like, feel like the government might come in and say, violation of the First Amendment, you told him to get his porn out?
Wow.
I don't know. It boggles the mind.
You know, it was funny. I was listening to a conversation today on the radio about, they were talking about, predictive population growth. So one guy was on there was worried that we were underpopulated. Another guy was worried that we were overpopulated, and they were basically squawking it out. And both of them said the whole mess could be fixed by providing sex education to women and contraceptives, and then all this would be fixed. And I thought, man, like, I hear what you're saying on a logical level. I really feel like y'all are missing Jesus here. Like, I feel like if anybody understands population control or how to grow, say, a world, I only know one being with that kind of experience, right? I'm not that guy. I know one guy that has grown an earth and then you know, made it fertile and then decided what was going to happen, right? And they've taken that one character out of the story. And I thought, it just seems so foolish to, like, take a story that's already half written, and then decide you're going to take authorship of it and decide what to do with the characters. And it's of course, that, I mean, it's one side. It was on the radio. I was talking to myself in the car. But it just got me to thinking a little bit, like, how many times in my own life and obviously others' lives do I do this, right? Like, I take what the Lord set up and I go, I see where you're getting at, author of the story. Old Mike's going to take a turn. Yeah. We're going to do this. We're going to call this chapter, 27A. And then I'm going to do this. Like, he has no idea what he's doing. And it was just funny to listen to him talk with no reference to a creator or that there was any type of guiding hand to the world. It's like, look, we need to talk to him about sex, and that way, you know, they can have more contraceptives. That way, if they don't want kids, they don't have to have kids. Or, you know, if they want more kids, then at least we give them good health care, you know. And I thought, you know, I mean, there's good logical points either way, but the whole discussion was missing God and, like, a family unit that can, A, financially support kids, and B, emotionally support kids, and C, spiritually support kids, right? We'll move C to A. But you know what I'm saying? Like, none of that was talked about on – because if we had – I mean, you'd have population control probably fall right in line if people had to sit back and go, look, can I reasonably afford this kid?
Check.
I got a raise and pay for this one, and I intend to do so. That probably cuts the population down by quite a bit.
Yeah, if we could even get half the dads to hang on to the buck and bronco for longer than they do, we'd really have something here. Instead, we got dads that'll impregnate a woman and then haul out and impregnate another one and then haul out and impregnate another one and be a father to none of them.
I feel like ladies don't like you referring to them as bucking broncos.
That was a mistake. Yeah.
Hey, speaking of that, by the way, a classic, I don't know, this is wrong because it ultimately produced pride in me, but I was driving home and I was late. I was late coming home from work today and my wife calls and I pick up the phone and she's like, where are you at? And so I start saying, here's where I'm at. Here's what I'm doing. What's the deal? I mean, you could have started dinner. What's all this stuff? She's like, I could have started dinner. I'm like, well, I mean, what was it, 20 minutes? I'm trying to, explain my way as way I'm late. And I got halfway through the conversation, and I stopped and said, I've done this wrongly. I'm very sorry. I should have called you, and I apologize, and I'll be home directly.
Yeah.
And then I thought, yes. And then I thought, you prideful beast.
How dare you recognize your achievements?
The devil has set me up. Be late, Ben, and be prideful when you're right. It's ridiculous. Did anybody think for sure that when Mike said the thing that was missing, it wasn't going to be the yelling at dudes? Did anybody think that? I thought for sure what you were going to say was, the thing that was, you to educate women, the thing you were going to say was, why wouldn't you educate the men? That's what I thought was coming.
The dudes, but I agree. It's the actually, that's, point that's missing. Yeah. He kind of answers all the issues.
Yeah, that's actually how I feel. But that's not the legitimate answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like dudes could use a good yelling. But the Lord Jesus will handle most of the yelling. You know what I'm saying? I'm only called to deliver to certain people. Hey,
anyway, if you're not for being referred to as a bucking bronco, that's info@livefromthepath.org. And just let us know about how you feel about Mike and his ways.
Bring it on. My inbox is full already from last week.
Hey, man, the penis episode was on KTIA. I caught a little bit of it.
Yeah, it was. We may have said some stuff a couple weeks ago that shouldn't have made it past the Christian network. I mean, it's totally passable on primetime TV, but maybe if you represent a Jesus radio show, you might not want to use the word penis.
I think it ultimately turned out fine, but I did get a slight enjoyment out of the whole crux of the conversation was people using words and Christians getting upset about them and putting all your eggs in the don't use that word basket. And just of someone being like, oh, those boys said penis.
Oh, no.
Dan. Dan has Pope style. Follow up.
How do I follow
you
up
You have to
that?
Follow the penis discussion. Go ahead. Sorry, KTA. Go ahead, Dan.
Okay, so here's my Pope style advice. You got the 10,000 people out in the front yard. They're waiting for me to say something, and the advice is get up and start moving. And here's the context to that, so that it makes sense. I talked to someone recently who was just pouring their heart out. There's just a lot of issues going on in their life. Lost a job, had made some mistakes. Just life was down. I mean, just everything was just down. And just kind of wondering, is God mad at me? Does he not like me? Is he punishing me? And we kind of started talking about the story of Job a little bit. I said, he's found himself recently really diving into the scripture, really diving into his prayer life. You know, and I said, well, it sounds like you're going in the right direction. You know, you have responded correctly. You know, maybe God's just getting your attention. Maybe he doesn't, you know, he's not angry at you. He's not punishing you necessarily. Sometimes it's just life. You know, and I think you're probably going in the right direction. I said, you probably have read Job lately, haven't you? And he, well, yeah, I read Job. Well, here's the story of Job. Here's the situation with that. In one day, he loses everything. You know, 10 children, all of his business, everything. It's gone in one day. And you fast forward to the end of the chapter, of the book, and it says at the very end there that basically God gives everything back. You know, he has 10 more children. He has more success financially in business than he had before. And I said, well, how long do you think that took? You know, I mean, he lost it all in one day. You're not going to gain everything. Whatever it is you're going through in life right now, you're not going to wake up the next day and everything's right again. We know it took at least 9 months for the first baby to come. You know, he had 10. So we're talking about an extended period of time that he rebuilt his life, but he had to get up and start working. He had to do something. He had to engage back into his business. He couldn't just lay in that heap of of dung and ash like he was before with the boils, you know, and from the scene earlier in Job. He had to get up and start moving forward. And I said, I think that's where you're at right now. God has taught you something. You've connected with him at a higher level. And what you need to do is just acknowledge, okay, I'm through this. I'm working through it. I'm still in it. But you've got to get up and you've got to start moving and start working forward with your life and rebuilding, finding the job, you know, correcting the mistakes and that kind of stuff. And I just thought, you know, there could be just people out there who just need to hear that, you know, that just get up and start moving forward. At some point, you've got to stop feeling sorry for yourself. Stop feeling hurt. Stop finding all these reasons to not get up and move and move forward in your faith.
Yeah, that's it's interesting to think about because even guys, like at some point, right, the sackcloth comes off.
Yeah.
Wash the ashes away and it's time to move forward. Like you don't see anybody in perpetual sackcloth.
Yeah. And I don't know if I've ever really thought of the Job story thinking how long it took him to rebuild. It just kind of popped in my head.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, I don't know, maybe that was a Holy Spirit moment. I don't know, but I thought that was kind of worth repeating. You know, it's it takes a while. It takes a while to rebuild your life when you've crashed, and it's not going to happen tomorrow. But it won't happen at all if you don't start moving.
Yeah, yeah. And some of it's kind of just accepting your circumstances and saying and just calling it for what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember in 1 Samuel 3. So it's he's called. Samuel. So the Lord is calling Samuel, and the house of Eli is in some trouble because his sons are running a ruckus around the temple. And I always love this. Like every time I come to this, like you'll see a number of underlines and circles in my Bible because the Lord speaks to Samuel and kind of pronounces the judgment upon Eli and his house. And Eli says, you know, kind of tell me what did he say? Don't hide this from me. And he says, and I declare to him that I'm about to punish his house forever for the iniquity that he knew. Therefore, I swear to the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be atoned for by sacrifice or offering forever. And then Samuel told him everything and hid nothing from him. And then Eli goes, it is the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him. And I thought, I mean, he just had judgment pronounced upon him. And he's like,
yeah, sounds about right.
It's the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him. And I thought, yes, I wish my life, like I wish I had a better outlook on life. That whatever may come, I'm like, it's the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him.
Yeah, it's like that frat buddy you had from back in the day where people come up and tell you some outrageous stories that he went like skydiving with Superfly Jimmy Snooker or something. And you're like, yep, that's old Steve. He does that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that's basically Eli's response. He's like, that's the Lord. Yep. He called it right. You know, he's right about that. You know, it's funny, Dan. I was just thinking about. I've been talking to a couple fellas, and actually this is me on occasion, but like sometimes you find yourself in a little bit of a lull in your faith, you know, like you've seen great things. You've seen Christ do great things and you've been a willing participant in his gospel and talking to others about it. And then, you know, every once in a while you'll be in a valley and when you're in it, you're like, how did I get here? How do I get out of this? Right? It just doesn't feel right. You're not against him and you're not like willfully sinning or disobedient. You're just like, there's something wrong. Something doesn't feel right. I'm just not feeling the Holy Spirit like I used to. I'm missing some kind of charge, you know. And it was funny because that was the exact same advice that I'd come up to. It's like you just got to get back to where you were, and it's going to take a little effort on your part, right? Like if something happened, the disconnect happened somewhere,
and it wasn't God. It wasn't God
that left you, right? And so like when this happened to me, I started looking back. I'm like, I'm still reading my Bible. I'm like, I did kind of cut it way down because I felt like I was overdoing it a bit. And I was having like 50 conversations with people about Jesus a day, and I was listening to a lot of sermons, and I'm like, this is taking up way too much of my time. I got to tone this down. Well, there may be some truth to what I was saying, but I went way too far the other way. Like I pulled the rubber band back so tight that when I let go, it went to Kansas, you know. And so I think what happened was I had cut my Bible reading down and my prayer time down to the point where my relationship was borderline non-existent. Right, it was all fact. I was pulling in factual information. I wasn't pulling in any hard information, and so I that's exactly what I did. And that's actually how I kind of worked it back. Is I just started moving a little bit more. You know, and it's just like I just had to start all over. but with somebody I already knew that I knew had grace for my actions. But it's funny. I was just thinking about that today because there was a couple people that I was going to plan on talking to this week about almost that exact same subject. So that's fairly timely.
Just because I have it up, I was going to share with you something else that I really enjoyed from 1 Samuel.
Okay. All right.
So 1 Samuel 6, the Philistines capture the Ark of the Covenant. They get all kinds of troubles, right? Boils and stuff. Things are causing them all kinds of problems. We got to get rid of this. We got to send it back. And so they tie it to a couple cows, and they send the cows on the way. And the wording is great because when it talks, this is in 1 Samuel 6, 12, it says, or 11, and they put the Ark of the Lord on the cart and the box with the golden mice and the images of their tumors. And the cows went straight in the direction of Beth Shemesh along one highway, lowing as they went. They turned neither to the right nor to the left, and the lords of the Philistines went after them as far as the border of Beth Shemesh. So I thought, isn't it interesting that the cows were able to accomplish something that the nation of Israel never could, which is not to turn to the right or to the left, right? Because the whole Torah is full of, you know, don't turn to the right or to the left, and they're constantly failing. And these cows think it's the exact same language, right? The cows are rocking what the nation of Israel could not do.
And lowing all the way.
Yeah.
We got this down.
It's going to tilt. Don't touch it. All right, anyway, you're listening live from the Path. Every Monday night here at 7 p.m. Hey, if you do want to get a hold of us during the week, you should find something better to do with your time. But you really could send us an email at info@livefromthepath.org. I actually do like that. I don't mean to casually mock you.
No.
But, you know, if it's between, you know, spend time with your wife and kids or, like, email us, go with the wife and kids.
Yeah. Wait till they're in bed or something.
Yeah, that's cool. Stay up late, listen to the podcast, get angry. You can contact KTA if you don't like the word penis. They can help you out with that stuff.
Yeah. We talked about this last week. If you're a dude that's busy and totally involved with your family and ministry or whatnot, you're not hitting bed before midnight. You don't have time.
Yeah.
So put us between 11:45 and midnight on the way out.
Yeah.
Kind of deal.
Yeah, I think that's going to work. All right. What do we got time for? All right, Arendelle, we got time for one more tune. What
sure.
You got?
Yeah. We're going to do a hymn for you. We're going to do one that was one of my grandmother's favorites after church on Sunday. She would, after the meal on Sunday, which was always awesome, she'd be singing the hymns that we sang in church. One of her favorites was Trust and Obey. So,
when we walk with the Lord in the light of His Word, what a glory He sets on our way. While we do His good will, He abides with us still, and with all who will trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey.
Jeff Arendale. You're listening to Live from the Path. And wait.
That's that is that coming on a CD, Jeff? Because that's spicy.
Yeah, no plans for it at this point, but
Maybe reconsidering that.
But maybe reconsidering with this look in your eyes.
I liked that one. I really did like that one. It gives me the fire in my belly.
What's that? What's my favorite?
I mean, I had some iffy looking pumpkin cookies before I came in, so I mean that could have been part of it.
What's my favorite one that I'm looking forward on the CD? What's my favorite one, Ben?
You like the Most High?
Yeah, Most High. Is that going on the CD?
Oh yeah. That's
I love me the Most High.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Sometimes I like to listen to it at home when I do the laundry. That's just something for you to know. Maybe we could talk about it later. Yeah, that's not for everybody.
You are listening live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. Big thank you to the Eisenhower team, 99.3 KTIA, and the folks at Westville Veterinary Clinic. If you're listening to the podcast, we still got some more show to go. Plenty of free bonus. The bonus content.
Yeah, there's Dear Life from the Past coming up, Ben.
Yeah, that's right. We've got some advice on Dear Life from the Path. I hope you're having a great evening. Thank you for listening to Life from the Path. I brushed my teeth with this one. You know what you don't do? Cut your nose hairs to this one.
That's a problem. It's like Edward Scissorhands up in there.
Hey, man, I did... Hey, so I was recently on a very long plane ride, and I almost Edward Scissorhands was part of the movie selections.
Yeah,
and I just couldn't get myself to do it because, like, I thought the lady next to me gonna judge me watching Edward Scissorhands, and I couldn't figure out. And then I spent a good hour trying to figure out how she would be judging me, like what she might think of me. What's the profile of a guy that watches Edward Scissorhands by himself on a plane?
What kind of man is this?
I couldn't come to anything.
There's nothing to come to.
I thought of something else. Oh, hey, another good moral question. Sorry, I like to let this tune play. A moral question. So I went to the Walmart, and I needed, I was recently in the Philippines, right? And I plugged my hair clipper in, and it fries. It fries in the Philippines. It's just like there's a small fire in it.
Right.
And so I need to buy a new one when I get home. So I go into the Walmart, and they're for sale, and it seems expensive to me. So I look it up on the Amazon, and it's like $6 cheaper. So I say... Is it wrong to go into the Walmart, find it cheaper on the Amazon, and just buy it from the Amazon and leave the store empty-handed? Because that's what I did.
No, that's right on.
And not only did I do that, but like I also decided that I need something to control my my forest of ear and nose hair.
Yeah.
Because I put like heretofore had just waited till my wife pointed it out and then grabbed it between the old pinchers and gave it a Yankola, you know.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. My wife would make stuff up. She'll be like, "You got a nose hair hanging out," and I'll look at it and I started taking pictures of the underside of my nose every once in a while just so I know what's up in there. Because she's always saying there's stuff out of it, and I look at it, I'm like, I don't see anything coming out of that.
No, it seems all right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't either.
Good.
I think, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm a good. I took one out this morning.
I tell you something, though. You want to wake up in the morning, you yank one of your nose hairs out. I tell you what, that'll give you the what for. Out the door you go, buddy. You're ready for life.
I'm so glad that I do not have this issue, and I'll never have to worry about
it. Oh, no, it's coming.
It's coming?
Yeah.
What do you mean? You don't, what? What, you have a malfunctioning nose if there's no hair in it?
You remember that? You remember that grandpa from Look Who's Talking movies?
Abe Vigoda.
Yeah, that's what happens in my ears. I'm telling you.
Hey, wait.
Yeah. It's like Martin Van Buren coming out my ears. It's outrageous.
You know, you're at the barber shop, and the lady that's cutting your hair, and you're all done, and you're looking good. Goes, now you want me to get those eyebrows for you, don't you? It's like.
Whoa.
What's wrong with my eyebrows? What do you mean? What are you talking about?
Yeah, I did it this way on purpose.
Hold on.
I call it the Encino Man. Leave it alone.
I haven't checked this in a while. Hold on. What's going on? Is avagodadead.com? Hold on.
Yes.
No. The answer is no. Ugh. No.
Okay, good.
Is it like 125?
I don't know. But like they keep the side. I mean, here's the deal. You never know whether the guy actually keeps the side updated. Because, I mean, yeah, he could have died already, and I just don't know.
That's a good point.
All right, Mike, what do you got?
Dear Live from the Path, my 86-year-old dad buys all his food from the markdown quick sale tables, then lets it sit in the fridge for weeks or even months before he eats it. He insists the mold is penicillin and good for you. He eats moldy cheese, bread, fruit, and meat that I wouldn't feed to my dogs. He has turkey in the freezer that expired in 2008, and he can't understand why I won't cook it for my pets. Dad reads your column every day, so please give me some input. By the way, he isn't poor, and he can afford good, fresh food. Perplexed daughter.
Okay, here's the thing.
Is he still? I mean, he's alive, right?
He's kicking it. He's ready for action.
I feel like he's. It seems to be playing out in his fashion.
Yeah.
He says it's fine. He seems to be fine. I don't know what room you have to argue with him.
Yeah. You're a food snob.
I disagree.
What do you mean?
It is unhealthy.
Says who? You? You have a doctorate in nothing. He's still alive and kicking, Dan.
For now. He spends a lot of time in the restroom.
Yeah. I didn't say anything about that.
Oh, I know.
You can't add stuff to the story.
I think I'm willing to put some stake into the fact that if we ask a professional or someone who does have a degree in this that, hey, you know, we have a guy that's actually eating moldy food. He claims that the mold is penicillin. What would you tell him? Is it safe or not? I think that person would say no.
Well, so, old meat.
They just want you to visit their office. Can't you see this?
He said the old meat was to be cooked for the dog.
No,
he said.
No, she said she.
No, the daughter wouldn't even cook it for their dog.
No, right. But follow that up. Read the sentence again. He doesn't understand why I wouldn't cook it for my pet.
Dang, I didn't have it ready. He has a turkey in the freezer that expired in 2008, and he can't understand why I won't cook it for my pets.
Thank you.
We didn't prove anything. You just put your hands up and said thank you.
No, it's because you pointed at me and said, no, she said that she, I wouldn't even give it to my dog. What I'm telling you is that he wasn't offering to eat the old turkey. He was saying you should at least cook it and give it to the dog.
I think there was other old meat, though, wasn't there? Yeah, steak and stuff.
Didn't say anything about steak.
I think that's an initial sign of some early on dementia that he needs to get fixed. He needs to get looked at.
What's wrong with you people? He's fine. He's 86 years old. He knows life. At least for the last
I think
50 years, he's been running his own.
He's kind of forgotten something of life, and then he can't remember why he's sick all the time.
Are you serious?
It's because he's eating bad food.
Arendelle, you on this train too?
No, I'm bowing out. I have no expertise in this area.
You have opinion either way.
I throw it away.
Is either poisoning himself or not, and you're bowing out.
Okay,
that's classic.
All right, hold on. So why is mold bad for you when penicillin is good for you? Mold is usually associated with negative thoughts. We all know that a lot of molds can cause serious health problems, but did you know that it could also help us? They're going in some cheeses. Moldy cheese is just cheese.
So far, the man's healthy as an ox.
But some cheeses do not have mold. And mold is what gives it that distinctive taste.
Right on.
Mold is in many medicines, and it fights
off bacteria. He's a connoisseur. He's not a fool.
Yeah, I mean, he's not licking the walls.
I feel like he's all right.
What about this? What about milk? When is it not okay? When do you, if you have milk left over and it's
2 days before the date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got to go.
Bad.
You wait till it tastes bad.
Sometimes if you smell it even before it's bad, it smells bad.
You
don't smell it. Just drink it.
Yeah, 2 days before the date, I chuck it.
I'll taste it first.
I'll give it to the kids.
But I thought when the mold was good for us.
You mix that with Cocoa Puffs.
That's
you can't tell.
That's not mold.
Yeah.
That's curd.
That's nasty is what it is.
Here's what Secular says. You guys were no help at all. Secular says, your father is a product of his upbringing during the Great Depression, a time when many people were starving. The habits people form when they are young can be hard to shake. One reason that perishable products have a sell-by date is that the food begins to lose its nutritional value. As to your father's excuse that he's ingesting penicillin when he eats moldy fruits, vegetables, baked goods, and dairy products, I'm sure his doctor would prefer he get it by prescription only. Still not going to kill him. Spoiled food can cause serious illness, which is why the U.S. government publishes pamphlets on the important topic of food safety. Oh, yeah. I trust them with my life. Visit foodsafety.gov and print out some of the food safety at a glance charts for him.
Sure that's going to work.
Absolutely. If he refuses to take your advice or mine, perhaps he'll be more receptive to what Uncle Sam has to say. Absolutely.
I believe Secular got some tax write-offs for that one right there.
Here we go.
Hey, Dad, I know you don't trust your family, but here's a couple pamphlets from the government.
Yeah.
I'd like to show you how this is unhealthy with a graph from the United States government.
Please enjoy this overly funded, underorganized pamphlet. Dear Life from the Path. Oh, man, this one seems heavy. My boyfriend of 2 years, Jesse, has suddenly changed. He's pushing me away. Oh, no. We're both 17 and have a 9-month-old baby.
Oh.
15 to 17, there are some changes going on. I understand. Jesse spent the first 6 months of our son's life in state custody. Since he has been back, he has been really distant. He ignores me and isn't affectionate anymore. When I get upset about it, he denies it and says I have no reason to be upset. I'm scared our relationship isn't as strong as I thought. My son deserves a family, but it's falling apart. What should I do? Okay. So.
Repent.
Here's the thing. Jesse probably is distant. He's gotten himself way in over his head.
He took on a bunch of man-sized responsibilities, and he's a boy.
There's no relationship. It's only hormones.
Yeah. You're in for some trouble here. So the real answer is, apart from yelling at the kid, which is not available at the moment, we'll just say that he's unavailable for being yelled at. You, as the person that wrote in here, you need to find yourself some good godly counsel, a woman, a good godly counsel who's a woman, and snuggle on up to her and start having some conversations. There's a lot of background in this story. There's a lot of stuff going on. You're already in charge of a taking care of a child. What would be best for Jesse is to do the exact same, but with a fella. Get him paired up with a good godly father who knows a thing or two about raising kids and walking a life with Jesus Christ. But there's not a quick fix here. There's not a 20-minute conversation you're going to want to have with him. You basically have a life apart from God, which is hard to reconcile into anything that represents joy until you make that move towards God.
And it's not too late.
It's definitely not too late.
It's going to be more difficult. You have a child, but that's okay. You can still win through this thing. Just you got to admit to yourself, he's gone. He's just gone. He got what he wanted. He's going to go find someone else now. It's gonna happen, and it's probably best. It's best for the family, best for the child, best for her. She needs to she can start rebuilding her life and start moving forward, and she'll be okay. But it's gonna be a long road.
Arendelle, you want to pony up on this thing?
I agree with Dan. It's gonna be a long. There's a lot of hurt there. There's a lot of mistakes, but it's never over. I mean, especially with Christ. So,
here's what Secular says. This is where the disagreement's going to come piling in. You have no idea what might have happened to Jesse after he was sent away, so give him some space. But let him know that he wants to talk. If he wants to talk about it, you're willing to listen and be supportive. Don't push and don't be clingy. You may have to be strong for all three of you. Complete your education, take parenting classes, and encourage Jesse to do it too. Do this and your son will have a family, whether or not it's the one you thought you'd have with Jesse. I kind of agree so far. Most of that seems all right. I don't know if I agree taking all the burden off old Jesse here. He's supposed to be shouldering a good amount of this and really coming away with nothing. But if he's not going to do it, you know, somebody has to do it. So I think that's all right. I wasn't ready for the next one, Philip.
I was trying to think if I don't know that she's in a really difficult spot because like don't be pushy or don't be clingy. Well, I mean, I don't know how else are you going to get that guy in there. He ain't going to show up to that stuff. Hey, I'm feeling distant. Maybe you should take a class with me. I feel like if he's not responding to someone who can offer him sex, going to this parenting class is probably not something he's going to get on board with.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Something about it.
Ready? Dear Life from the Path, I have two sisters and three brothers ranging in age from 52 to 69. All of us except one are comfortable financially. The exception is our brother Jerry, who is homeless. He lives in a park and does odd jobs. He owes money for old student loans and probably back taxes, so he's hesitant about finding a real job and having to fill out a W-4 form. I know a lot of boys like this. Yeah, I can't really report that. I believe he uses alcohol and marijuana, but not often. Absolutely. I am the only family member who is in contact with him, and I give him money occasionally. The others may not be aware how bad his living situation is. I have no room for him in my house because my adult daughter and grandson moved in. We are not a close family, although we have no animosity. Should I send an email or letter to my siblings about our brother? Should I ask for suggestions on how to help him? How should it be worded?
I'm sure. Write him a letter.
Where are you going to send it?
To Dave in the park.
No. He's saying, should he send it to the brothers?
Yeah, to the homeless guy.
Okay. You're not going to say, dear Jerry, you're homeless. Love, Sharon.
Please read this and then use it as a pillow.
I don't know. You can't make your family care. You can't make the rest of your family care.
I mean, maybe they do care if they knew about it.
I like the insinuation that he owes back taxes.
Well, it's like gossiping in his problems.
And he may be smoking marijuana. Yeah,
he may be smoking pot, drinking booze, and owe back taxes.
Oh no, back taxes. One of those. Didn't he read that pamphlet the government gave him about taxes?
So what, maybe I didn't quite understand. Like,
the question is, should I involve my siblings? And if I'm going to write them a letter, how should I write it?
She needs to know if he really wants help or needs help. Or I mean, she's assuming a lot. She hasn't had a conversation. She knows he's in a park. Go to the park. Have a conversation with him. Hey, why haven't you gotten a job? I suspect you owe back taxes. Is that true? or is there a different issue?
And let's get this out of the way. It's the taxes.
Otherwise, she's just spreading hearsay. I mean, she's just she needs to know what's really going on. How can you help someone if you don't really know what the problem is?
Yeah, that's a guy. I mean, maybe he's an outdoorsman. Maybe he loves to sleep in the park and he likes marijuana and alcohol. Yeah. I mean, good luck getting him out of it. We can write a bunch of people. You know, I mean, if he wants help or needs help to get out of that situation, then you know, I'd start reaching out. Obviously, if you're not able to do it, I don't know that it has to be some kind of special wording. Hey, our brother Jerry sleeps in the park. Do you give a rip about that or not? Let me know. Give me a shout. Call me on the phone. You got a phone, don't you? You know, let's skip the letter. Why don't we just call a guy?
I mean, what are they going to do? Have an intervention? They're all going to show up at the park. All right, go buy a house.
Right, we're taking your bench.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that's public property. Put it back.
What is it they're going to do exactly?
That is a weird style, especially a bunch of blue hairs down there. I mean see, we can get three 65-year-old guys down there roughing up another 65-year-old man.
Oh, I guess I didn't catch the age.
They're like, we said, ranging from 52 to 69. I'm assuming they're all three elderly and rolling in there and starting to boss elderly homeless brother around. It doesn't seem right.
Maybe he was in a nursing home and Arendelle set fire to the place. That's how he ended up in his predicament.
No, that was Mike that did that. Set the fire.
Do you feel the Holy Spirit?
Fire is generally the presence of either judgment or the presence of the Holy Spirit. Pick. But I'd run either way.
Here's what Segler says. The answer to both questions is yes. Your message doesn't have to be long or fancy. If I were writing it, I would put it this way. Are you aware that our brother Jerry is homeless, living in a park, and surviving on odd jobs? This is a disgrace to our family. Do you have any suggestions about how to help our brother? Wow. Bring in the pride train. Don't let it go without me saying how to fix me now. People who live on the streets or in parks usually have more problems than unpaid student loans and back taxes. There's often a significant mental health or substance abuse issue. My suggestion would be involve a social worker in steering your brother toward the help he needs to get his life back. If there's money involved, wouldn't it be more wisely spent that way? Ooh. Anybody? I feel like I'm on my own here on this advice.
I don't know. I feel like, to what end does it do any good to goad the rest of your family? You know, like either you care or you don't care. I don't think saying, you know, oh, you might be potentially disgraced if so-and-so was living in the park. I mean, aren't you already disgraced?
I have never thought that about any member of my family that I hope someone doesn't find out they're my family because it will reflect poorly on me. Never have I thought about that. And there's some lowlives on my side.
Yeah, no doubt.
No doubt.
Everybody knows.
All right, you got time for one more? One more.
Dear Life from the Path, I'm getting married next year, and in my excitement, I asked four of my good friends to be my bridesmaids. As the dates grow closer, I'm realizing just how much a wedding really costs. Would it be wrong for me to change my mind about having bridesmaids? The girls haven't paid for anything yet or wasted any time during the planning process. Please help me. I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, but I can't afford to have a wedding party. Does it cost a bride money to have bridesmaids?
There's all kinds of stuff. There's the food and the...
You got to give them gifts, right?
Gifts.
You don't have to do nothing.
Well, you got to buy the outfits.
I don't think I got
No, gifts. I think the bridesmaids buy their own outfits.
Do they?
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Have you ever been a bridesmaid, Aaron?
Never have.
Yeah.
Oh, always the bride.
I think it's perfectly fine to communicate to the people and say, hey, guess what? Weddings are expensive. I can't afford this. Just be honest.
I would take back my wedding. I mean, not the marriage itself, but the wedding any day of the week. I wish I'd have done something. I mean, way scaled down. I don't care. I don't care at all.
The llamas were excessive.
Well, I mean, they shipped from Brazil for like half the price.
we planned our wedding in 1 month.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to do it homeless like you're simple. Saying, but I mean, I've toned down a little.
We had a church. We
Hey, this isn't the Dan show, Dan. It's not everybody be like Dan.
I think they should
You're basically saying you should be like me
just,
is what you're saying.
Think how happy
They're asking for personal advice, how to affect their own situation, not how to be more like Dan. Here's what you should do. You should shape your life like I've done mine.
What your problem is,
you don't own this sweater.
Write a letter to your brothers and sisters and think about how shamed they would be if they don't help.
You had a low-rent wedding.
Yeah. I don't want to shame you.
She could be homeless.
The following people did not help with my wedding. By the way, you're not Dan Hudson. Here's what Secular's advice says. Contact your good friends individually and explain the situation just as you've explained it to me. Once they understand that financial constraints prevent you from having the wedding you fantasized about, none of them should feel slighted that you need to scale back. Frankly, I commend you on your good judgment in recognizing this now.
Here's the deal. No one else is involved as involved in your wedding as you are. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're committed to some kind of deal. Most of your friends don't care. They don't care. And here's the deal. If you have catty, judgmental friends, maybe you should swap out friends.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time to find it. There's a nice man in the park who could use your friendship.
It's where the rubber hits the road.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to scale down my wedding. No way. You're out of it. Done.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's all right.
Okay.
All right. You've been listening to Live from the Path. Thank you for joining us tonight. We will see you next week. Hey, so we didn't get to the conversation about the place for working on your Christian life.
Dang, that would have been a good one, bitch.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to give you a heads up of what it is, and then we can think about it, and we'll talk about it next week. So here's kind of the premise. We've concluded that the focus of the Christian faith is the life of the Christian. Therefore, our messaging is shifted from Christ and Him crucified to humanity and it improved. Ever since the fall of man in Genesis 3, we've been obsessed with ourselves. Add to that fire the fuel of the Enlightenment's mantra, progress is inevitable, and the manifest destiny DNA that has marked our country since its inception, and it's no surprise that our man-centered culture of narcissism has seeped into the church. Whether it takes the crass form of health, wealth, and prosperity, or the more theologically sophisticated form of an obsession with sanctification and holiness, the bottom line is, we've concluded that this whole thing is about our transformation, not Christ's substitution. Or to put it more accurately, Christ's substitution is a means to an end, the end being our transformation. So my question, though, from that is, then what place, certainly not diminishing the power of grace and the necessity of it, but what place do we talk about things like the Sermon on the Mount or like the advocations to be holy because I am holy? Or is he saying, be holy, you will be holy because I am holy? So I guess that's what I want to talk about, kind of where this is coming from and what that fits into. You know, are we on the wrong track by saying, fellas, this is how you got to pull yourself together. Stop this.
Are we going to yell at dudes next week, though?
I don't know. Should you continue to yell at dudes?
I don't know.
How does that fit in the grace? Are you denying them grace?
You confused me on whatever you just said there. Just the whole thing from beginning to end.
All right.
Hold on. I think Arendelle's going to send us out with a tune.
Yeah, what you got? What you got, Arendelle? Send us out.
I'll fly away. How about that?
Okay, hold on a second.
I'll fly away, oh glory, I'll fly away. When I die, hallelujah, by and by, I'll fly away. Yeah.
time.